Good evening and welcome to the November 5th, 2017 meeting of the Astoria City Council. Or is that that's six? Okay. I'll put the glasses on. Our roll call, Chief Ames.
Councilor Price.
Here.
Councilor Granillo.
Here.
Councilor Johnson.
Here.
Councilor Jones.
Here.
Here. Thank you. Tonight we have a presentation for our Chief Forester, Mike Barnes, our City Forester, and I want to tell you a little bit about Mike before I have him come up. Mike Barnes has been the City of Astoria's consulting forester for the past 14 years. During this time, he has maintained and periodically updated the Watershed Forest Management Plan and has overseen the implementation of the plan. He has assisted the city with conducting controlled timber harvests and managed the replanting of the harvested areas within the watershed. After the epic windstorm of December 2007, many acres of the urban forest within the city limits were totally blown down. Mike was instrumental in organizing a salvage logging operation to recover the blown down timber for sale to area sawmills. He also managed the effort to replant the wind-damaged areas so the urban forest would eventually return to its pre-storm condition. Mike was one of the leading players in the successful effort to sell carbon credits on the city's watershed forest. Mike has always been a team player, and he has developed and maintained excellent working relationships with public works staff. We wish Mike the best in his retirement and his future endeavors. And I'd like to add on a personal note that Mike's a great guy to work with. So, Mike, if you'll come up to the dais.
Wow, great.
Should be in wood.
Branches sticking out.
Okay, well, here you go. And congratulations, and enjoy your retirement, and we're going to miss you.
Well, it'll be a short retirement, because I've got other things to do. Okay.
Well, good. Have a great time doing them.
Thank you.
Would you want to say anything here?
Don't ever give me the mic. I guess I should say I'm Mike Barnes. No. It's been a pleasure working for the city, and Arlene and I had a lot of fun when we did the bicentennial tree planting project, right?
Right. 200 trees.
Yeah, some of them actually are alive. But it was amazing. It's been a pleasurable experience working with the city and the staff. They've been fantastic. I've gone through a couple of mayors and city managers and a whole turnover of council. So everybody's been outstanding, and I wish the city well. You have an excellent resource in the Bear Creek watershed, and it'll continue to provide the main thing that it provides, water. Water, water, water. Quality and quantity. And that was my main goal as I took over this endeavor, was to ensure that water remained clean, clear, flowing. And we did turn a few dollars through the harvest activities as well. So thank you for letting me become a part of the city for a short number of years. Thank you.
Okay, thanks again, Mike, for all your work. Appreciate it. Tonight, we'll start with reports of councilors. Councilor Nimmowell.
Well, our community lost somebody who I think made a really big impact on a lot of people's lives. That is Mary Jo Grohlke. She taught aqua fitness classes at the Aquatic Center and when the pool used to be at Tapiola. Her obituary said for 20 years, but I remember it being longer than that, that I took a class from her. I have a card if you guys would like to sign it. I think she made a big impact on a lot of citizens' lives, and I'd like to give this card to her family. Thank you.
Great. Councilor Brownson.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I did go and attended a meeting with the League of Oregon Cities, Small City Support Network, North Coast Region, and this was basically centered around talking about transient room tax, which is always an interesting issue for the city. And mainly, the topic was about dealing with intermediaries. And these would be like online travel companies, so Travelocity, Expedia, Airbnb, etc. And there's a contention about collecting room taxes, and that the intermediaries, people like Travelocity, would say, well, we don't have to, we collect it, but we don't have to pay it. We just pass it on to the hotel or whoever, and then they will pay you the room taxes. And in Oregon state law, it says otherwise, that they're the collectors, they're the ones responsible. And where this comes into play is will be with the vacation rentals and Airbnbs, because they're, everybody else has sort of come online, but Airbnb hasn't, and they still refuse to submit room tax to the different municipalities, and have been very reluctant to do anything, and they have opted in a few cases to try and make agreements with the cities. And in doing so, they're asking the cities to behave as they would want them to behave. The city of Astoria was approached, and we refused. The state is going to crack down, and they will have to collect, and they will have to send a check. So that was the discussion. It goes into a lot more detail, but I thought it was pretty interesting that when you get together with all these other towns and cities around here, this is just one example of some of the common issues that we all have to deal with. And we had an opportunity to sit around and every city that was there. And this is the North Coast, and we had great representation down there from all the cities up and down the coast. And hearing about what they're doing and the issues that they're dealing with were, once again, very similar to what we as a smaller community are dealing with. And I also attended the Port of Astoria meeting this last meeting, and I plan to continue to attend those just to be a representative of Astoria and have a presence there. That's about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor Price.
Thank you and good evening. And I'm suspecting you might say something about our meeting with Helping Hands and perhaps the task force. Well, the mayor and I went down to Seaside last week and met with Alan Evans, who's the director of Helping Hands, and there were a number of other people there. Chief Spaulding was there, and Chief Skirmerharm from Cannon Beach, who is on the Helping Hands board. And we just talked in general about how to help Helping Hands come to Astoria, how to continue to address homelessness here. The mayor is putting together a homelessness task force that the chief will be heading up, and it includes most, if not all, of the social services providers throughout the county and additional people. And I appreciate being appointed to that as well. And so just in that general area, I was reminded today that Clatsop Community Action, it's getting cold, and Clatsop Community Action has a utility assistance program, and so does the city, and it's pretty underused. And so so we just would like to remind residents that those things are out there, and make use of them if you need them. Thank you.
Councilor Jones.
Good evening, Mayor. I would just, even though Mike stepped out, I can't blame him for not wanting to stay for the whole meeting, but I want to just echo your comments, Madam Mayor, and we're so lucky to have had a professional forester of his caliber, and we're so fortunate, it just reminds me how fortunate we are that we have our own watershed. We're one of the few cities anywhere that actually owns their entire watershed, and the fact that we have such an excellent forest management plan where we're able to harvest a small percentage, less than 1% of our forest every year, and then replant and get about $100,000 of needed revenue for the city, while at the same time still maintaining our water cleanliness, you know, in excess of all the standards that are required, is just really phenomenal. And we've been very fortunate to have such an excellent forester.
Thanks. Well, I want to allay any concerns that there was any altercation at City Hall. But I do want to also announce that my pitching career is over. This was a torn rotator cuff, and so hopefully they have me glued back together or whatever they did. The other item that I did is I appointed Joan Herman to the Planning Commission. You probably read that in the paper. I'm very much looking forward to seeing Joan on that commission. And I am finalizing that task force on the homelessness, and hopefully that will be up and going in the next couple of weeks. So we're hopeful of that. Okay, consent calendar. Consent calendar items are just passed as one motion unless someone asks for an item to be removed. Did anyone from the community ask for an item to be removed?
There were no requests.
Okay. Anyone on the council? Okay, I'd like to remove item C. It's an early repayment of wastewater treatment plant loan, and I think any time we're able to pay off a loan early, we should let the public know it and celebrate that. So I just wanted to mention that before we, that's all I had to say about it. Okay, we need a roll call. Chief Ames?
Councilor Dunning? Councilor Neville?
Aye.
Councilor Price?
Aye.
Councilor Jones?
Aye.
Councilor Brown?
Aye.
Aye, and I guess we needed a motion too, but we passed it. Okay.
And just Councillor Price, I actually said aye after you were called, but that's because my microphone was off, and I just wanted to say aye with my microphone on. Sorry.
So, Mayor, you took off the agenda item for the early repayment of the wastewater treatment plant loan. Were there any specific questions or anything you wanted to be able to highlight?
I just wanted to commend the city that we were able to actually repay something early and save funds from interest payments.
So with this, as this is a resolution, you'll need to actually have a motion, a second, and actually ask for a roll call again, because this actually takes a resolution to pass.
Well, I'd like to make a motion to approve the early repayment of wastewater treatment plant loan.
Second.
Mr. Cook.
Councilor Vanderwill?
Aye.
Councilor Brownson?
Aye.
Councilor Price?
Aye.
Councilor Jones?
Aye.
Mayor Lemire?
Aye. Thank you. Okay. Our first regular agenda item is a first reading and public hearing for the Community Action Team proposed housing rehabilitation program.
So Community Action Team has proposed that the City of Astoria be the applicant for a new grant application under the Community Development Block Grant Program for housing rehabilitation of single-family homes. And this program has been utilized in Astoria as well as throughout Community Action Team's three-county service area, which includes Clatsop, Columbia, and Tillamook counties. As with the existing program, the Community Action Team would take on the responsibility of writing the grant application, and if successful, would administer this program. There was information included in your council packet with regards to the proposal, and we do have representatives here from Community Action Team. Bev, I would ask if your team, at the beginning, go up and just at least introduce yourselves for the city council after the public hearing is opened. So for tonight's city council meeting, a public hearing has been scheduled, and it's required to receive testimony and to consider whether to move forward with the application. And the purpose of this hearing is for the city council to obtain views from citizens and to respond to questions and comments about community development and housing needs, and especially the needs of low and moderate income persons. So tonight, it's recommended that the mayor read the public notice before opening the public hearing in its entirety, and that the council hold the public hearing to take testimony. If the council is in agreement, it would be in order for council to authorize Community Action Team to work at the direction of city staff to prepare a grant application for submission to the state of Oregon.
Okay. This is pretty long, so I will be as quick as I can. The city of Astoria is eligible to apply for a 2017 Community Development Block Grant from Business Oregon. CBDG funds come from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The grants can be used for public facilities and housing improvements, primarily for persons with low and moderate incomes. Approximately $12 million will be awarded to Oregon non-metropolitan cities and counties in 2017. The maximum grant that a city or county can receive is $2,500,000. The City of Astoria is preparing an application for a 2017 Community Development Block Grant from Business Oregon. The proposed project will assist low and moderate income families in and around the City of Astoria and areas served by the Northwest Oregon Regional Housing Rehabilitation Program. It is estimated that the proposed project will benefit at least 66 persons, of whom 100% will be low or moderate income. A public hearing will be held by the Astoria City Council at 7 p.m. on Monday, November 6, 2017, in the City Hall Council Chambers, located at 1095 Duane Street, Astoria, Oregon, 97103. The purpose of this hearing is for the City Council to obtain citizen views and to respond to questions and comments about community development and housing needs, especially the needs of low and moderate income persons, as well as other needs in the community that might be assisted with a community development block grant project and the proposed project. Written comments are also welcome and must be received by the Community Development Department by November 3, 2017 at 5 p.m. at 1095 Duane Street, Astoria, Oregon, 97103. Both oral and written comments will be considered by City Council in deciding whether to apply. The location of the hearing is accessible to persons with disabilities. Please contact the City Manager's office at 503-325-5824 48 hours prior to the meeting if you will need any special accommodations to attend or participate in the meeting. More information about Oregon Community Development Block Grants, the proposed project, and records about the city's past use of Community Development Block Grant funds is available for public review at 1095 Duane Street, Astoria, Oregon, 97103, during regular office hours. Advance notice is requested. If special accommodations are needed, please notify Community Development Department at 503-338-5183 so that appropriate assistance can be provided. Permanent involuntary displacement of persons or businesses is not anticipated as a result from the proposed project. If displacement becomes necessary, alternatives will be examined to minimize the displacement and provide required reasonable benefits to those displaced. Any low and moderate income housing that is demolished or converted to another use will be replaced. The City of Astoria, Brett Estes, City Manager, Interim Community Development Directory.
So, Mayor, if you'd like to open the public hearing, perhaps representatives from Community Action Team could maybe start off the process.
I'll open the public hearing.
Hello, I am Susan Wagner. I am here representing the Community Action Team. We are out of St. Helens, but we also have a presence here in Astoria, right down the street. We also cover Tillamook County as well. I apologize for you having to read the whole thing. I'm glad you didn't have to also read it in Spanish, although it was published in Spanish as well. So, Astoria is a member of the Northwest Oregon Regional Housing Rehabilitation Program. It consists of all 21 jurisdictions throughout Clatsop, Columbia, and Tillamook counties. And what it does is it serves low and very low income persons with housing rehabilitation assistance for their homes. This is a very critical component for these people because they don't necessarily have their own wherewithal nor the funds to make repairs to their homes to keep them safe and secure. A lot of times their roofs are falling in, their floors are soft, they have holes in their floors, they have no working toilets. I mean, this is really desperate people. Housing rehabilitation helps these people. So far, over the last, 17 years, October 26, 2000 was the first loan that was made through housing rehabilitation. We have helped approximately 275 homeowners throughout the three-county service area. The regional loan program is very important because it recycles the funds. These are zero-interest loans that are given to the homeowners. When the homeowner passes, which happens sometimes, and unfortunately, when they might sell their home, when they redeed it or they refinance, those funds come back to Community Action Team as unrestricted funds, which means we can then loan them out again to other people or use them for other affordable housing projects. We are coming to the City of Astoria asking you if you would be willing to be the lead applicant for this year's application. You are in a perfect position because you've recently had a CDBG project and have all of the background and all of the documents that are required to make it a successful application already in place. There are certain things that have to be done. A Section 3 plan, which assists low-income persons with work. The language assistance plan, which is for people who speak Spanish or other things. Those are already in place because of your other project. So I don't know if you have any questions, if you would like more information, or I can be.
And just to clarify for the City Council, our most recent community development block grant project is being referenced as the Senior Center grant.
Yes.
And so that was, we had much of the work which was done already for that project is still valid.
2011, correct, was the last
housing.
The last housing rehabilitation program that the City of Astoria sponsored was in 2011. The goal is to market it locally. One of the things we are asking is that we have it as the entire region as the applicant so that we do not have to go forth with a separate MOU between you and a minimum of two other applicants. That's required by CDBG rules. If we simply use the Northwest Oregon Regional Housing Rehabilitation Program as it stands, you would simply be the lead applicant and the entire region would be filling out that requirement of the additional applicants.
Well, I was certainly excited to see this. We've, you know, every community in Oregon is talking about affordable housing and homelessness, both issues. And as you're probably well aware, Astoria has very little buildable land. And so it's just perfect for us and it's greatly appreciated. I certainly would be in favor of supporting this.
It does preserve the homes that are most at risk, and we want to protect those and keep those people in their affordable houses.
Mr. Estes, what resources, either staff resources or monetary resources, are required from the city to either participate in or have oversight of this program?
So where it comes down to is participation through the Community Development Department in putting together the application, and then there's some, whenever they're in, you know, there's some, maybe some of the loans which are given throughout the project time where there's some participation, and then also on the finance department side with regards to closeout of grants and throughout the year. There's participation that happens between finance staff and Community Action Team on that aspect.
Thanks.
Thank you. So Mr. Estes, just on that point, there's a good chunk of money in this for management. Does some of that come to the city to take care of staff costs here?
No, that goes to goes to Community Action Team for the management.
Okay. It's actually in CDBG's rules. It is not allowed to supplement the jurisdiction's finances unless they are hiring an entirely new person.
So this would serve about 22 homes, 60-some-odd people in those homes, and about $20,000 seems to be the average loan for these. But it will be the whole region, so do we have any idea how much, how many homes in Astoria might be served?
It is our intent, as we've spoken with Mike Morgan and with Mr. Estes, that we market to Astoria and the surrounding region, the surrounding area primarily. The projects are first come, first ready to the gate. So if you had, for instance, somebody who came forward in St. Helens, who had all their paperwork, had everything in line, there would be a possibility you would serve them first. There's a whole process that goes through the guide is about this big by the time we're done putting it together. Our intent in as the city of Astoria would be the jurisdiction that would be the lead to market first here. The plan is for letters to go out in the water bill to all of your residents, advising them of the program, letting them know how to contact us or contact you if they're interested, to please, so that we can create a current wait list, which then would be, because they're local, because those were the letters that went out, those would create the primary wait list, and that's how we would serve your area.
I would also want to say that, you know, over time, you know, as was mentioned, the last time the city of Astoria applied for this program was 2011. There's kind of a rotating cycle of jurisdictions where you're in kind of the three-county area where it becomes another jurisdiction's turn, if you want to call it that, where there's benefit that happens when another jurisdiction happens to apply. There's reciprocal benefit across the three-county area.
And currently there is a housing rehab program going on where we have served residents throughout Clatsop County, even though it's run, the Columbia County is the lead out, so it does get spread.
Are there deadlines for application and or for use of the funds?
Yes, so application is due December 29th of this year. We are ready to begin putting the application together as soon as we get approval from the state. There is a project intake form which I've already filled out and will be delivered to the city, presuming that you approve this evening. We then go through a process of being invited, or the city is invited, to put in an application. That application is due by December 29th. After that, it goes through a rating and ranking series of benchmarks, and they should let people know by February. You then have 2 years to complete the projects. We hope to get them done in 18 months or less.
Thank you. And how was the amount of about $400,000 determined? Because there's a lot of money in this, and it seems that, you know, some millions could go outside the I-5 corridor.
Yes, there is never enough money. That is a statutory amount set by the state. It's okay. $400,000 maximum.
And one last question, thank you, Madam Mayor, is there is an external loan committee, and who puts that together? Who is on that?
City of Astoria appoints.
Mayor appoints.
Yep. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we may ask you to come up if we have questions from the audience. Okay. Anyone in the audience want to speak to this issue? Okay. If there are no comments, then I will close the public hearing and ask for council discussion.
Well, I'd just like to hear from our city manager, who's interim community development director. Obviously, this isn't one of the bigger projects that we're looking at, but at our last work session, we were talking about all of the things that we wanted to do that included the Community Development Department, and we realized that we can't do everything we want to do right now because we've got a lot of irons in the fire. I just wonder if you think this is a good idea. I mean, it certainly sounds like it would benefit some citizens and help, you know, to provide some much-needed repairs to homes in Astoria, but just, you know, do you think this is a good idea in terms of what you can handle right now?
No, I think this is definitely a great idea, and honestly, this is really kind of continuing work that we've already been doing. So this is really taking an existing program and giving it additional life. And so I don't see this as adding new and different work above and beyond what the Community Development Department has been conducting already.
Okay, thanks. Well, that is all the reassurance that I need. Thank you.
We have a motion.
I move that we authorize CAT to work at the direction of city staff to prepare the grant application for submission to the state.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you very much for your presentation. You must have made it very clear. No more any questions?
Thank you very much.
Anybody want to hear me read this again?
I am.
Okay. The next item of business is a proposed rate increase for water customers outside city limits.
The city owns and operates a waterworks and water distribution system that consists of water treatment, storage, and distribution. Although it's owned and operated primarily for the citizens of Astoria, the system also provides water to water districts and customers outside the city limits. I'm going to ask one of our staff from the Public Works Engineering Department to present more about this topic. And Cindy, if you will take it away.
Cindy Moore, City Support Engineer. And my hope is just to clarify a few items in the council memo, so if you have any questions as I go along, feel free to interrupt me. Just want to touch on a few key points. So let's first start with what part of the water resolution that we're talking about. So I thought I'd just go ahead and put it up here word for word. And these are the charges for customers outside of the city limits, our water customers. All users and water districts outside Astoria city limits shall be charged as listed in section 501(1) and 2. Those are both talking about demand and consumption charges that are standard for all our customers, and an additional 10% for providing out-of-city service. So it's that 10% that I'd like you to focus on as we're discussing this item. And the reason that we even have a 10% charge for those customers, there's a list of reasons in your council memo that generally center around a couple of different things. One is just their location outside of the city limits. So there's additional time to service those customers because we have to travel farther. Water meter readings are farther. There's more infrastructure to get the water to those customers. Another part of the that contributes to that 10% is that how they are coming off of our water system. So we have a transmission main that comes from our headworks, from our where we have our sand filters. And most of our outlying customers feed directly off of that transmission main before any storage. All of our in-city customers feed off of either Reservoir 3, 2, or our East Astoria tanks. So there's a lot of things that we do operation and maintenance-wise that there's an added cost because we need to ensure that the water supplied to those customers that don't have the storage to buffer, that they're receiving quality water and the volume of water. When I've talked to people about this, there's a lot of times a confusion in the math, so I just would like to go through an example really quick so everybody understands what we're talking about. The city charges on a two-month billing period. In every two-month billing period, customers have a demand charge, and that's the charge, the baseline. If you don't use any water, but you have a water meter that's turned on, you are charged the $36.13 for that for a 3/4 inch meter. So we have different rates for different size meters. And then we have consumption for 1,000 gallons, you pay $3.87. So a lot of times we talk about our hypothetical customer who uses about 7,500 gallons of water a month. And for that hypothetical customer, they would then have $58.05 in the 2-month billing cycle. I want to keep reinforcing this as every 2 months. So for a 2-month billing period, our hypothetical customer here would be billed $94.18. And that's a really pretty heavy user. My family of four does not use that much water. Just keep that in mind. So the same customer who's located outside the city limits pays 10% more. They pay 10% more on their demand charge. That means there's 10% more on the consumption charge, which the total bill then is 10% more. And just so you get a feel for who these customers are, I wanted to go through. We have water districts as part of these customers that are outside our city limits. There's a list of 7 there. They range in size from about 7 units to over 200 units. Our largest water district is only Waleski. We also have other types of customers. We have Tongue Point Job Corps, and as was mentioned in your council memo, this is the biggest user of all of the outside city limits customers. I'm told they have 473 students, plus all the support staff that go along with that. They have programs that use a lot of water, so they're our biggest user. Then there's Coast Guard that's located at Tongue Point, the fairgrounds, forestry, the bridge, they don't use much there, and a few residential customers that are not associated with the water districts. In total, all of those customers outside the city limits account for about 5 to 10% of the city's total water production. It varies depending on time of year, and fish processing kind of play into that. So that's where there's the range of 5 to 10%. And just to note that we've been in communication with these customers about this proposed rate increase for the last couple months, phone calls and letters. And we did encourage all of them to attend this meeting, so I would expect we will hear from those folks. So what is our proposed rate increase, as we see being the fair and equitable contribution from these customers, is to increase that 10%, an additional 5% per year for the next 3 years. And this next item goes through really the specifics. We want to ease the burden as much as possible for this kind of increase. So we've looked at staggering the increases starting the beginning of the fiscal year, July 1st, 2018. So replacing that current 10% with 15%, and then going to 20% and 25% in the next 2 years following. And those increases beyond those items that were listed in your council memo and that I discussed, we're looking at updating our water master plans and taking a really good look at what was recommended in those plans that are now starting to be outdated. And we're looking at future capital improvement projects that will be serving these customers, specifically the Clearwell that was mentioned in the council memo. When we're looking at these projects and looking for funding, we submit our rate structure to these funding agencies, and they scrutinize that information to make sure that we're doing our due diligence to manage our system appropriately. And they will be looking at the rate structure we have for our customers outside the city limits as well as the customers within our city limits. And how we would, if we have support from council, how we propose implementing these changes would be come back with a resolution, a revised resolution to council in December for the 5% increase that would be implemented on July 1st, 2018. And then the next 2 increases, if we have your support on the strategy moving forward, would just be included in your review of the water resolution that happens every year. If we go back to that original table spreadsheet that I showed with comparing the two, a city customer and an out-of-city customer, I've added three columns to show the 15, 20, and 25% increases to this specific hypothetical customer, who would generally be paying $2.35 more a month for each 5% increase. And this is all based on the current water rates, of course. And one of the last things I just wanted to bring up is the comparison to the our neighboring communities. This isn't the only factor that we looked at, but always a consideration that council wants to see. City of Seaside charges an additional 100% for their customers outside city limits. The Cannon Beach, 50%, and Warrenton, 50%. The industry standard, as we've been advised from the FCS group who did our most recent rate study, is 25 to 50%. And they tell us that that's a standard that doesn't necessarily require any special circumstances. If you have something that you need more funding for, then of course you can ask for more. Let's see here. And these agencies, they all have different sources of water than we do. They manage it differently, they treat it differently, and their customers outside the city limits are different, just like we have all kinds of different ones. We do know of several where there is a water district that they serve at a master meter, just like we do, where the water district has their own infrastructure and their own meters that they maintain. So just wanted to point that out. And I put this up just for your reference and for everyone else's reference. This is what's being proposed, and I want to open it up for your discussion.
Okay, council discussion.
Well, I'd like to hear.
Okay, we'll open it first then. Okay, if you'll come up and give your name and your address, please.
Councilors, Mayor, my name is Tom Alphonse, 37665 Timber Lane, Scandinavian Canary Road. Been out there for 40 years. As Cindy mentioned, yes, we get water from the city, from the main line. From that point on, goes through the meter, our lines, our reading. The city reads the meter once every 2 months. That's what they do. You supply us with great water, and from that point on, all the breaks, we take care of. We pay for all the breaks. The city used to, when we had major breaks, would give us many of the systems breaks on the fact that you lost the water, you never got to use it. It doesn't work that way today. What goes through that main meter, we pay for regardless of what happens to it. And we've paid through the nose for water we've never been able to use. The city charges $3.87 per 1,000 gallons. We're at $9.80 right now. $9.80 for every 1,000 gallons. My water bill on an average, the lowest at $60 a month. This increase is gonna affect a lot of the lower people that live in our area that a lot of them don't pay their water now. There's 12 people every month that we have to go hunting for their money. And this is just gonna be, we definitely can't put 25% on them in 2 years. It's just unbelievable that you would consider, we're your best customers. We buy the water from you, and from that point on, it's our problem. I just can't believe that someone would come up. We're kind of being sectioned out here. We get the water before you guys do. We're closer to the headwaters than you are. And yet, we're kind of being, it feels like we're being penalized. I just can't believe it. But thank you.
Thank
you.
May I ask a question, please, Mr. Alphonse? Mr. Alphonse?
Yes.
May I ask, what water district are you with and how many customers do you have?
I'm from the John Day Water District.
Okay.
We have 123 customers. Mr. Bronson was on our board at one time. He lived out there. He knows a lot of our problems. I mean, it's unbelievable. Work on the Highway 30 on the middle of November when those water lines break. Built in 1953. Used parts from Tongue Point. It's just, we've been trying to come up with new, which we've started from the Corps of Engineers with a new system. It takes a lot of money, as you well know, but like I said, we're at 980 a thousand. You're at 387. We're killing our customers now, and we still can't seem to get ahead. Thank you.
Cindy, could you respond to the 980? That doesn't make any sense to me if, according to these figures up here.
I'd be happy. I can respond a little bit, too, okay. Just because I'm familiar with it, and I've been there. Because what they pay out there is what Astoria charges the fee, and the Water District pays that. But from there on, they have to administer it and distribute it. They have to cover their fee, their maintenance, and all those fees. So that's what they've got to bump that on top of what they pay the city already. And that's where it really goes up, and trying to upgrade infrastructure and whatnot. All those costs have to be kind of distributed through fees to the users. So that's why it keeps going up and up and up, because they have these costs that keep kind of piling in.
Okay. So the fees that you listed up there were what actually come into the city. That isn't necessarily what the water districts are paying then.
Right.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Okay. Is there anyone else? Okay.
I guess I should bring my glasses up here. My name is Brian Crowder. I live at 9761 Claremont Road, Astoria, Oregon. I'm a board member for the Fernhill Community Water System. Hey, excuse those. Fernhill Community Water System. I'm also the water quality technician. I'm here to touch a few points of your water rate increase. We're a small customer-owned water company with approximately 95 owners. Also, our rates, as Tom said, we are 10-something to help pay for our infrastructure, our water loss. So that just goes to say our bills are pretty high monthly.
Don't forget the $17.85 surcharge.
Yeah, we do have a surcharge right now to fix. We had to fix a water main that's on John Day at this point in time. So I feel that we are a good standing customer. The city of Astoria, provides us with water only, same as Tom said. No infrastructure maintenance, no meter reading, late notices, etc. We have for several years been repairing, replacing our failing infrastructure as money allows. We have been experiencing considerable amount of water loss for quite some time. We do not receive leak adjustments as I feel City of Astoria in-town customers receive, which in turn we are required to pay full rate for these losses. When Astoria requested that we were in need of a new water master meter and the cost was going to be $4,000, we paid promptly, no questions asked. We currently pay 10% higher water rates than the City of Astoria customers, and as I stated earlier, we are paying for only water without added services for our customers we are paying for water only without added services of your customers residing within the city limits. I feel I am comfortable with rate increases that are dispersed to all customers in the city of Astoria, not increases that are solely for out-of-city customers. In conclusion, I am against any water rate increases to solely just out-of-town customers.
Anyone else? Okay.
Hi, my name is Guy Rivers, 1438 Jerome Avenue in Astoria. I'm the Finance Administration Director at Tongue Point Job Corps Center. I'm not here asking for a rate increase, but the Job Corps Center, as you know, is a Department of Labor, U.S. Department of Labor program, and I work for the company that has the contract to operate the program on behalf of the Department of Labor. We are smack dab in the middle of a five-year contract that we won, and it's a fixed dollar contract. We appreciate the relationship we have with the city. The city's been very fair with us, have dealt with us in the past in the infrastructure we have. So very very good relationship there. The one thing I want you to consider is that with a fixed dollar contract through 2020, additional cost comes from somewhere else in the program. That's a fact that that we'll deal with. Budgets are budgets. You all know how, about budgets. We can work it out. It'll come from another area of the program. And when you do the math on roughly, I think it's what, 2.5-3 million gallons a month, it's a significant chunk of money. It's not insurmountable, but it will change a little bit of the dynamics of the program, but not enough to where I can emphatically say don't do it. So just something to consider as you make a decision and trust your decision.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, anyone else? Okay.
Mayor, councilors, Tom Savage, 37359 Levisky Lane. I'm a member of the Only Levisky Water Association. And like the others have said, you know, we appreciate and we get good quality water. The services that were mentioned in the memo, you know, are services that the association provides. All of the things that were mentioned about additional costs for operations and maintenance, meter reading, service calls, emergency response, monitoring, all of those things are all borne by the association. So in reading through the memo, trying to connect and see where these costs are coming from, there may certainly be some were mentioned about it not having storage, but it's not clear the costs that are associated with the rate increase. I couldn't get that from reading through the memorandum. I looked at the budget. You know, I saw that that there was the fiscal, your current approved 2017-2018 fiscal budget. I looked at the water division costs. I couldn't see any connection to increase in costs that were associated with out-of-city users compared to all users. That's not clear. Can't see that. We, like everyone else, you know, I'm not sure how old all the water systems are, but ours was built in the 70s. So a lot of our 14 miles of mainline water lines are near the end of their age. We just had a contract for $1 million and have a $500,000 loan out where we fixed the worst portions of our main lines. We still have a number of phases that we still have to do, but we're trying to do it in a way where the members can afford those increased costs. So we've got your rate, and anytime the city users get a rate increase, we get that as well, and the additional 10%. But then we also have to bear the cost of replacing our main line. So I wanted you to take that into consideration, that there's a lot of costs that we bear. And even though this seems incremental, there are a number of people in the Only Levisky community that even small increases are a burden. Okay. I'd like you to take that consideration. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Anybody else?
And Mayor and Council, I would note that there was an email which was provided to you at the dais from Ken Klee, who is the president of Only Willisky as well. So I just want to make sure that was noted for the record.
Hi, I'm Cindy Johnson, 37815 Eagle Lane in Astoria. And I'm new to the water board, so this is all new to me. I've only been on it a month. And this is what I found out in a month. Just reviewing the memo. Is it all right if I give you guys the copies of what I'm going to just quickly review? That the memo itself was kind of confusing. It took me 3 or 4 times just to figure it out, and I had to give it to other people to figure it out because I wasn't sure if the whole amount was increasing by 20% or 25%. But Cindy helped me a lot, and so I was able to understand that the first increase is 10%, the next increase will be 5%, and then the following with the years till 2020. That's how it's working. It always increases 10%, but next year in July it will be 15%. And then on that amount, if you look at the back page, that I have the total amount that we actually pay you is $37,927. So by the end, by 2020, we will be paying you $10,000 more at $48,086 for the same amount of water that we use today. And I have my water bill here. I wrote a letter to the editor that never made it in, that my water bill right now is about $80, but by 2020, it will be $102.69. And my concern is that in this area, there's 123 people, and most of them are retired and on fixed budgets. And I think to put this burden of this increase on people who are already on fixed budgets isn't realistic, because we do have almost 10% of the people that don't pay their bill already, and it's over their head. So I think that's stuff to think about. And we put this memo, this little poster flyer thing here on everyone's mailbox so that they would be aware, because this John Day didn't have any way of talking to their customers, informing their customers about this meeting. This is what we had to do. And we had to start a Facebook page to tell people that this is going on. Because if I hadn't joined the board at the beginning of October, I never would have known why they were increasing my rates. Because I already wondered, why do I pay so much for water? You know, like I said, my bill is $81, and I don't want it to go up. And if you look at the back of this, I have who the customer rates are for the local districts in the area. I called them on Friday, and I've been calling them. And as you can see, we pay more for the price of water than anywhere else. John Day, if you want really good water, cheap water, you should live in Napa, because there you can get 6,630 gallons for $41. My daughter lives there. I looked at her water bill. And we pay 10% more than what you pay here in the city of Astoria. And also, our taxes are going up. My tax bill went up $400.
Okay.
Just this year alone.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Okay.
My name is Alex Reichel. I'm a board member on the Only Willisky Water Association. I just got on there recently. I live on 37579 Labisky Lane, and I have a couple services out there along with the other family members and stuff. But one thing I would like to talk about is we did do, as Tom Savage mentioned, a major upgrade to our system. We fixed things. A lot of the stuff was items, I believe, that didn't really have to do with our infrastructure. It was a natural disaster. Highway 202 went out. They diverted traffic through our association lines, which are on the backside. A lot of the road had some damage. Clatsop County did some work out there. There were some big leaks that we have recently found and leaks that we fixed prior to knowing where they were at. And then as we were fixing them, we found more. There was road damage that was done. But we paid all that. And we didn't have any issues with it. We didn't get any leak credits on some of the stuff. We also, you know, looking at some of the statements that were put up there, If the rates are going to go up that high over the next 3 years, we only use, as it stated, 5 to 10% of your guys', you know, mass water production. I don't feel that it's right to be putting that on outside city, you know, users when we're already paying a massive rate. And like we say, we do all of our own meter reading. If there's breaks, items that go out, myself and others go and fix them in the middle of the night. And it has nothing to do with anything you guys are fixing, maintaining, meter reading, adjustments, maintenance. All that's being done by us. And a lot of times it's being done in the community for the neighbors and everything at our own will. So that's just one thing I wanted to put out there. And raising the rates, as others stated, with people that aren't paying their bills right now, if they go higher, that's going to make it twice as bad. And I think it's going to be more of an issue if it goes up than it would be right now. So thanks for letting me talk.
Thank you. Any further comments? Okay, I'll close the public hearing then, and we'll have council discussion. I'd first actually like, Cindy, if you would go up and perhaps answer some of the questions that these folks have raised. It would be appreciated.
Do you have something specific? There were a lot of issues that were brought up.
Yes, there were. No, but mainly, I guess I didn't understand that they were responsible for all their repairs and maintenance and all that kind of thing. So explain why we need these rates to go higher.
Okay. So the water districts that were shown on that table on the left-hand side, those water districts have a master meter, and they are supplied water at that master meter, and then they have their own infrastructure beyond that that they maintain and operate, including the water meters for their customers, and they are responsible for billing and everything beyond that water meter. The customers on the right-hand side don't have that same situation. They're served directly from their the meter like you would really anybody else. So we're looking at them as a whole. When we were talking about the services that are required to service even just the water meters that are outside the city limits, so the water meter that serves each of the districts is still outside the city limits. And there is infrastructure that's necessary to get the water to their master meter. One of the big things that I touch on in there, and they mentioned also, is that they don't have storage. None of the districts that are served by the city, they don't have their own storage. So we operate our system to basically compensate for that. And that's why we'll be looking at building a clear well at the headworks, so we would have storage before those customers. So there's a vulnerability, there's a way we have to make sure that our system, we have a constant flow. So we are always pushing as much flow as necessary for the peak rather than for a day, peak hour is what they call it. So we are not running our system as efficiently as we could if we had the storage to buffer. And what was recommended in our current water plans that we're planning to update is that the city should require our districts to have storage. And that hasn't been something that we've felt we should do. We've been operating the way that we have for the last, since it was developed. And they've been married with our system since the beginning. So we're trying to have that delicate balance of what's fair and equitable for all the customers, keeping in mind that these customers require extra services, extra maintenance and operation because of the configuration. Does that make sense?
Okay. No. Could you?
No.
Okay. Let's let the engineer speak. I would like to ask though. Can you describe what a clear well is, please?
A storage tank.
Oh. Okay.
But it's at the networks, so it doesn't serve customers directly. It'll feed the transmission main.
Okay. Any questions from the rest of the council?
So I have a few. So just looking at the table, The comparison with the city of Seaside, Cannon Beach, Warrenton, and the industry standard versus the 10% surcharge we currently charge, I'm just trying to figure out, if, are we comparing apples to apples or apples to oranges? And I'm not, I think you mentioned something about, well, every municipality is a little different. But generally speaking, to the comment made by some of the commenters that you know, they have all these additional charges to maintain their own infrastructure. So I'm just trying to get a sense of the external customers that the city of Seaside charges a 100% surcharge to, and Cannon Beach and Warrenton charge 50% surcharges to. Do those customers also pay their own infrastructure maintenance of their piece of the line, or does the city of Seaside do everything for their external customers, and that's why they pay 100% extra?
And I don't have a comprehensive list of all of their customers, but I do have a couple of examples. Seaside does charge that 100% to their outside customers, and they have a water district that operates similar to the water districts that we've listed, where they have a master meter, they have infrastructure to maintain, and customers with their own water meters that they have to bill. Warrenton has a unique situation where they supply water to Gearhart, not all year round, but they supplement their water in the summer. And as you probably know, Gearhart has their own infrastructure to maintain and their own customers to bill. So those are a couple of examples.
I'm just trying to get the sense of either our external customers have been very fortunate for these many, many years that they're only paying a 10% surcharge compared to between 50 and 100% the other communities, or is it not quite that crystal clear if the other communities aren't having to pay their additional interest? But it sounds like the other communities' external customers also have to pay for their own infrastructure maintenance.
And they would have a variety of customers outside the city limits just like we do. So there's those couple of different examples. As mentioned, we really haven't looked at this rate since 1984. We haven't had this conversation. And in the water rate study that FCS did, they didn't address this particular part of the water rate. It wasn't part of their scope. So that's why we're having this conversation now.
And was that study that you're referring to part of our water master plan?
FCS group did, it was just on our water and sewer rates, looking at how, looking ahead at what the needs were of the city and how we should implement water rates to ease the burden of those improvements that we expected to do. It was done maybe 8 years ago, mm-hmm. 9 years ago.
So the increase to outside city users that you're proposing would pay for the Clearwell installation?
It would contribute to that project. Mm-hmm. Both the study that we need to do, a feasibility study, it's a big endeavor, as well as engineering and construction.
Okay, and do you believe that that would replace the need that's stated in the water master plan to have the water districts providing storage tanks?
We feel that we can then better manage our system efficiently. It would be a compromise where we would compensate for that. We would be able to compensate for their lack of storage. So if something happens in their districts, if they have a fire and they have a heavy draw or a huge break, we would have the buffering capabilities at our system to even that flow out and still maintain our system more efficiently.
Mm-hmm. I'm just having a little bit of trouble trying to understand how the city got to 25%, because it doesn't really look like, you know, there's any, as somebody stated, the lack of clarity between the costs associated with the proposed rate increase. I don't see anything concrete. So can you explain again how you came up with 25%?
Sure. It's really challenging to separate it. Obviously, it's not in the budget that we have them separated, because we are married together. Everything we do, we would do for our city customers, we just do more. And we could have line items of when our meter reader goes out to their site and when our operation maintenance goes out to their sites, but it's done, it's integral with our system. So we used basically the guidelines from our financial advisors that, hey, the low end range of what's standard is that 25%. So we think that's a fair place to land. And then looking at our outside areas, the cities surrounding us, we're still much, much lower than any of our neighboring cities. So that's where we ended up.
Cindy, would you, and Councilor Nimmowell, if I could maybe try to clarify on this. So, I mean, regardless, if we're going to be looking at installing a tank, a clear well up at the headworks, this money in itself, 25%, would not fund that clear well. There would need to be City of Astoria water rates to supplement that as well. You're looking at this as just an appropriate contribution you would feel to be able to contribute towards that project and other city water rates to, or water services to provide water out to those areas. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
And if we didn't, conversely, if there wasn't an increase and we still need to do the clear well, we'd still need to be able to find the funds to be able to do that spread amongst all citizens of Astoria, including the individuals who are outside the city limits. Is that correct?
Yes.
Nice. So that's kind of just, I mean, those are maybe some of the things for council to be able to consider.
One of the things I may have more comments later, but I just want to clear up this 25% thing that people are bandying around, because I think you got it even confused on the last page here. So you're saying it's 10% now, and it's going to increase to 25% over the next 3 years. It's not going to get a 15% increase this year and then another 5 and a 5. Just want to be clear on that, because that's how you ended up representing it there. So it's not as much, it's not quite as much as you said here. A quick calculation, instead of $10,000 over 3 years, it'll go up $5,000.
I don't understand your math, but
I
went over it so many times.
I'm just saying that the increase is only only is not a good word. The increase is 15%, not 25%. You're already charged 10%. So you're getting
10 and 15 equal 25.
Equals 25, right. That's all. I just wanted that to be clear for the point of discussion as well. And I can say that, the amount of money that's going to be coming in from this increase isn't going to be much towards what you plan on doing. It seems like a small drop in the bucket for the project. And the Stillwater, is that, could you talk more about that from the standpoint, is that something you're doing because of these districts, or are you doing it because Astoria needs that because of other pressures of water issues and water usage? Particularly, we have breweries now that use a lot of water that weren't here before, and if there's any additional fish processing that happens, we're going to have a greater demand too. And I know that towards the end of the summer, our water levels can get low, and we need some buffer. And does it have anything to do with all that as well?
It really doesn't. Okay. What we're proposing to do, it's more of it won't be enough storage to mitigate for cannery uses and that kind of huge flows and the fluctuations we see there. We're talking about being able to mitigate for, a fire. So all of a sudden someone's taking a large amount of water off of our system, it will buffer that and allow for better operation there. We will be recommending a clear well. We would be recommending a clear well even if we did not have any users outside the city limits. The size of the clear well is what will be dictated, and we'll need to consider those users when we size that clear well. That's the part that doesn't answer your question. So this, it will need to be larger because of these customers that don't have storage.
My question was probably more specifically and simply, are we building a still water because of the outlying areas and their potential needs, period? Or is there Astoria needs as well for this clear water?
I believe that what Cindy was saying is that we would still need that tank.
Okay.
It's just it needs to be sized larger for the outlying districts.
And do we have any idea how much a clear well is? I mean, an estimate?
Well, the memo says $1 to $2 million. So, is there any documentation anywhere that explains why in 1984 the surcharge as it is was dropped from 50% to 10%? Did something happen?
I don't have any documentation of that. Yeah. At that time, obviously, we weren't quite as electronic, so that would take a little bit of extra effort to find if there was some reason. It hasn't been changed since that time.
A good part of this strikes me as what has been happening over the past year or two here at Council is that, you know, we're reassessing our administrative fees for everything. And because it's been years and years and years, and that's sort of the drawback of keeping fees low, is that eventually you do have to raise them, and it creates a real problem because people have been doing other things thinking that this was going to be their fee, which may have helped, I don't know this for sure, but may have helped some of the water districts say, okay, our fee to Astoria is only 10%, so we can afford somehow to charge our customers this extra surcharge on top of what Astoria is already charging. So that's where you get to 9 or 10. And then when Astoria comes back and says, okay, we need another 5% a year for the next 3 years, it gets to looking like a real hefty burden. My biggest concern in all of this is Tongue Point, actually. Everybody really, as far as I'm concerned, who has a job or doesn't have a job is on some kind of fixed income. But Tongue Point is a little bit different. They are, as we heard, in the middle of they're in the middle of a 2-year fixed contract, and the memo said that this would cost them about $12,000 a year. And my other big concern is what Councillor Jones started out asking about: are we comparing apples to oranges? So I would be interested in digging a little deeper into what the other municipalities are doing. So I think that what I would suggest is putting this off for 2 years, which allows Tongue Point to budget properly and gives everybody else time to figure out how to make their rates work for their customers. And it's $25,000 a year is what the memo states that this fee, the 5%, would add in any case. So it's not going to be a big thing for public work. So that would be my suggestion.
Okay. Anyone else? Councillor Jones?
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on this one. I mean, no one likes raising rates on people, and I certainly don't. Well, I started to say I would never expect anyone to come into a council meeting to thank the council for raising rates on anything, although we have seen that. We have people who have been very much in support of raising their ecology rates to start the recycling program. But as Councillor Price alluded to, we the council had as one of our strategic goals more efficient operations and looking closely at ways to generate revenue for the city. And we asked all of our departments to look at ways to generate appropriate amounts of revenue, to include looking at the fee structures. And as was mentioned, we've looked at most of our fee structures. Ms. Cosby within Parks and Rec has raised quite a few fees after looking closely at what the customers could sustain. And we raised, prior to my coming on the council, raised the column parking fee by over a couple 100% to $5, still a very reasonable fee. We've raised a few other fees. So really, I think the question is, you know, what's an appropriate fee for us to charge? And most of what I've seen on these comparisons would tell me that, you know, since 1984, for the last 33 years, our outside customers have been very fortunate to have a 10% surcharge compared to anywhere from a 25, 50 to 100% surcharge that all the other municipalities charge. And you know, I feel like we've kind of told our staff that they need to look closely at fees and propose appropriate fees and rating or rates. And I feel like at least the first year of this, a 5% increase from 10% to 5% is still well below the industry standard. And I feel like we probably ought to do it.
My concern with this increase, you know, in comparison to our other fee increases, though, is that it's water, you know, and it's something that everybody needs to live. It's not like raising the rate on cemetery plots or aquatic center passes, you know, and I think going from 10% to 25% is too sharp of an increase for water, something that these people and our customers are completely dependent upon. And I do not have clear evidence right now that we're losing money on these customers, as we've been presented clear evidence with some of the other rates that we've increased, you know. And then the other thing, too, is that their rates do increase every time we increase the water rate in Astoria. And so they are paying more than they were paying, you know, in 1984. It's still the same percentage, but the amount of money that they are paying the city of Astoria continues to rise. And so, you know, I do think that, you know, I understand staff's point. And I think that the city is very constrained and needs all the help that it can get financially. So I get the need for an increase, but I do think a 15% increase is too high.
Well, again, I was part of the system out there, and I'm very familiar with the how difficult it is for those little water districts to function. It's a huge burden for such a small community to maintain and operate. And the people that operate these things, they're few. They work hard. They get very little compensation for it. And end users are. Do have, I mean, if you look, I would suspect that the population out there, there's the percentage of more fixed income or lower income folks compared to even here in Astoria is much higher, and that it is a pretty good burden on them. So I'm very sympathetic from that standpoint. And they also talked about some of the issues that come up when there is a major break in the line, just like what could happen here. You know, it happens, you get out there and you fix it as fast as you can, but you lose a lot of water. And the city of Astoria, I assume, absorbs that. The ratepayers don't get dinged extra because we had a broken line. When it's out there, if the line breaks, those thousands and thousands of gallons, before they're able to track that thing down and get it patched, that go into the ground, they get a bill for, and they are substantial. And there is no relief. There has not been any relief for that. So the city gets paid no matter what happens out there. So for a small system, a small community, it is a burden. And that's why their fees, their costs are so high. You know, it's a economy of low scale, I would say. So again, I'm very sympathetic, and I'd be very supportive of if we're going to need any kind of increase, that it'd be lower. I'm also agree with Cindy. I think that would be appropriate for Job Corps to give them that 2 years, because again, we caused them to do things in a program that I'm sure isn't extraordinarily well funded, and we affect them in a very negative way. So those are just some of my concerns about this type of an increase. And finally, I would ask Brett, are we going to be increasing the rate for Astoria water users also to help this happen along with this, another 10%, so that we carry the same burden for the still water, because that's what I heard a fairness issue here also, that we're going to give them an increase so that it will help support our upgrade of our system at the headwaters in some way, but we're not going to pass that burden on to our Astoria rate payers.
The infrastructure that's needed every year is determined going into the budget cycle, and then the water rates themselves are determined each year.
Right. And then their rates go up as as it was pointed out, theirs go up along with it.
Correct.
So again, fairly everybody increases. So I'm just not clear of the argument that this is needed because their needs are, it's been working pretty well up to this point as far as there have been fires out there. Nothing's gone wrong except that it's been a fire. So, and there have been major breaks, and I haven't heard a story of being wounded too badly by them. So I'm not convinced, that's all.
So Brett, can I ask just clarification? So the recommendation at the end of the paper says, it's recommended that council consider the proposal and authorize the 5% increase for a total of 15% effective 1 July of 18.
Right.
And then it says, in addition, provide concurrence with a strategy of future increases that would be presented to council.
Right.
So if the council were to vote in favor of the resolution, it's the only thing we are actually approving is the 5% increase effective July next year. You still have to come back to council for any future.
Yeah.
Is that
so? So first of all, if you were looking to increase the 5% for this fiscal year, we would need to come back to you at a subsequent meeting with a resolution. This is not putting it in place tonight. Mm-hmm. The thing is we cannot have a fee resolution that goes in subsequent years. So what the way it's written is saying is if you support the 5% increase to go into effect July 1st, 2018, we'll come back to you at a near subsequent meeting with a resolution to put that in place. We're also asking for direction to say, if you also concur with the theory of increasing it to 25% over the next subsequent years, we will add that to subsequent years' water resolutions for your deliberation and discussion. It doesn't commit you to doing it. It's just providing us with that direction, saying we're going to budget for it because you provide us with that direction, but it's not implemented until each subsequent year. It's like, for instance, with our parks department, there was a phased-in approach to increasing cemetery rates. We couldn't have one fee resolution that had what it would be in the next three fiscal years. We actually have to bring it to you each year to vote.
Mr. City Manager, is there any kind of alternative that you could propose tonight that might be effective with staff's strategy?
I think it's really coming down to how does the council want to be able to address these needs? What staff brought forward was a scenario to say, because there are ratepayers who are not taxpayers within the city of Astoria, they have a service which is provided, and should there be a scenario where they already pay more for that service, because that service was put into place at a 10% markup in 1984, hasn't been adjusted since then, is it time to adjust that? If the council says no, it's not, we're still going to need to do that infrastructure. It's just going to need to be that we factor that in to the water rates and spread that cost amongst all ratepayers, those who are residents of the city of Astoria and those who are out. And there may be cases where the citizens of Astoria, the taxpayers of Astoria, pay more to pay for that service for those who live outside city limits.
Well, it would seem to me that, I mean, I've learned a lot tonight about water districts that I didn't know before. And I appreciate all of you who came forward to speak about it. I assumed that the reason for this rate increase was that we did a lot of the maintenance and that kind of thing, and that's not the case. So my feeling is, yes, it should be shared. I mean, none of us are very happy about our water and sewer rates, believe me. Neither are the citizens of the city of Astoria. But it's what we have to pay. But I do believe that it's much fairer if we all take that bump up to pay for this well, to increase the, I think that is necessary, and we do all need to support that. But I think the rate should be distributed across the board.
I guess for me, the fundamental issue is one of fairness. What's fair? And it does seem to me that the rates we charge our customers outside city limits are extremely low compared to industry standard, compared to neighboring jurisdictions. I would be in favor of a motion to increase the rates by 5% effective July 1. And then a year from now, revisit the issue with more detail on some of these issues where we have questions about, like, exactly how much maintenance does the city of Seaside do for the 100% surcharge they charge. So initially when I came tonight, I thought what we were going to vote on was a commitment to, you know, 5, 5, and 5. But I see now that's not actually the case. We're just being asked to vote on, do we want to impose a 5% increase to go from 10% to 15% effective July 1 of next year? And then any future rate increases would be revisited at a future date.
Well, the way it was structured was asking for, trying to see whether there's council support for the full 25% over the 3-year period. The only thing that we're going to be able to come back to you here within the next month or so with is a resolution to increase it on July 1st, 2018. And so, I mean, the council could structure it that way. If you want to say, direct us to come back with a resolution at a future meeting for that first year 5% and revisit the others later, that is a viable scenario.
I think we all share similar feelings right now, although I'm not totally sure where everyone is at right now, and I'd like to come to some sort of a compromise and a resolution. And I think I just heard where you are at, Councillor Jones, but I'm not really sure where everyone else is at right now, and I'm curious.
Well, I don't favor any increase.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable with an increase at this point in time. And maybe I just need to know more and dig deeper into this, but I'm not prepared to be in favor of it.
And I'd favor a 5% increase beginning in July 1st, 2019, and then see where we're at.
Yeah, I could probably live with that. Again, put it off another year.
I wish we could articulate, you know, what the end increase is here, you know, tonight, because I don't really think that it's fair for people to not know how much their water rates are going to go up, you know, or for staff to, you know, try to plan financially what's going on. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem like we're going to be able to reach that level of clarity tonight, which is unfortunate. I would feel comfortable, you know, splitting the 15% increase in half and going up a total of 7.5%, but no higher than that. So I could live with the 5%, whether we do it July 1st of 2018 or what Councillor Price is proposing, I don't know.
Will somebody make a motion and let's see what happens?
Yeah, let's vote then.
Or not.
Anyone want to make a motion?
I like Councillor Emmerwell's last suggestion. I would make a motion that we authorize a 2.5% increase to the charges outside the city limits, or ask staff to bring a proposal, a resolution, implementing a 2.5% increase to charges for those outside the city limits to a total of 12.5% to take effect beginning July 1, 2018, and give staff concurrence with the strategy of future 2.5% rate increases on the 1st of July of 2019 and the 1st of July of 2020, which increases would be presented to council for discussion next year.
Second.
May I ask a question? How is a 2.5% increase going to be just completely alleviated by the fact of all the changes in paperwork and financial paperwork and so forth? I mean, will a 2.5% increase really result in anything?
Well, I think a 5% would be $25,000 a year, so it would be half of that is what it would generate.
How much would it cost to make those changes in the system?
We make the changes annually.
Okay, there's been a motion and a second then. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye. No.
So I'll tell you that this will be brought back to you, the first resolution. This was the providing the direction to staff. So this will be brought, the fee resolution to put the implementation in for July 1st, 2018 will be brought back to you at a subsequent meeting. Cindy, which council meeting were you targeting? Was it the first meeting in December? So the first meeting in December was the meeting that this will be on as an agenda item. So it is not put in place, it's just providing the direction tonight.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the next item is the first reading and public hearing of an ordinance modifying City Code 5.927, adding additional exemption related to park hours.
So the city works cooperatively with the Astoria School District, and Astoria High is experiencing increased demands for student parking that's exceeded their current capacity on the high school grounds. This concern is exacerbated by road work along West Marine, and it caused students to park further from the school, and in some cases having to cross the highway. Currently, there's a city ordinance which prohibits persons between the ages of 7 and 18 to be in a park during school hours. But City Parks Department and Police Department staff met with Astoria High's principal to explore options, and a partial solution was discussed that allowed students to be able to park on the lower parking lot of Tapiola during school hours. And the impact of the Tapiola Park parking lot would be, or park itself would be minimal during the school year. A change in City Code 5.927 would remedy the situation, and the ordinance which is presented to you tonight would make that change. I would note that our Deputy Police Chief Eric Halverson was going to be here tonight, but he is ill, so he is not able to attend. However, Angela Cosby, our Parks Director, has been working with police department staff and can answer any questions that you may have. Tonight, it's recommended that council hold a public hearing and consider whether to hold a first reading of the ordinance.
Council comments before I open the public hearing? No?
Okay.
I'll open the public hearing then. Anyone have anything, any comments that they want to make regarding this item? This is parking in Tapiola Park for the high school students. Okay? I'll close the public hearing then. And we need a motion then to have a first reading.
Well, I do have a question.
Okay.
So this is all because it sounds like the high school has parking problems in general. I mean, even if things were good on the highway, they'd still be parking out on the highway. They don't have adequate parking spaces for all the students that want to drive their cars to school. And I'm wondering in your discussions, if they have plans of handling that, because this cannot, I don't see this as a long-term solution. This is just temporary until the highway could you kind of address that aspect of it?
I can a little bit.
Okay.
In our discussions with the school district, the problem really arose more towards the end of last year and this year. They found actually as the economy is getting better, more students are having a car and driving to school. It's a newer problem. They're not sure if it's going to stick around or not. So they're starting to look at all options.
And then is our plan here a temporary for just this year?
We didn't specify just for this year. We are looking at it as kind of a test trial. Let's see how it works out, because my main concern is what is taking place in the park, and this law was put into place to prevent high school students from misusing the park and encourage them to go to school. So I really like the way the police department has written the ordinance, saying that you must go directly to school, and that the principal at the school is actually responsible for them during those hours, so they can actually act as their guardian, per se, and enforce whatever rules necessary. And the park is not fully being utilized during the school year, during school hours. It receives lesser use, so it's a parking space that's already there.
I will say from a broader urban planning hat, and if you talk to Ms. Ferber, Nancy Ferber, who's in the second row, when you look at opportunities also to be able to share parking lots, to not have to have larger, parking areas that are, that are unused at different parts. It's kind of a good planning tool. Of course comes the maintenance issue. I mean, you have the additional people who are driving on it. But that being said, I mean, rather than having more parking lots built with impervious surface and having to deal with those things, try to look at those opportunities when possible.
Right. Well, yeah, this could be one of the things. I did get some feedback from a few people out in the community, and there was some opposition to this, and I could see a variety of questions could be raised about cars and kids and going, taking them to school and whatnot. But that's not what I'm here to address. I would just, if this is something that we're offering, and I'm generally for it, but I wouldn't be opposed to it being limited to this year and then looked at again next year. Put a limit, at least have a relook point. Is that reasonable?
So you want it as codified in the ordinance, Councilor Bromson? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
Well, the flexibility that's built into the ordinance and the chief's design is that the high school is the one that's setting the rules. So the students can't park over in Tapiola unless they've been specifically authorized by the high school under their rules. So if they need it, then they can allow it. If not, they're not allowed to be there. So it is accommodation to the high school, really.
Sure, but if we see a problem, we have an opportunity to just resend the ordinance.
Oh, if we see that there's a problem,
I mean, that's all
we have the opportunity to be able to come back to, I mean, between Ms. Cosby and the police chief to be able to come back and say, hey, council, what we thought would as a possible solution's not working. We need to remedy that.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I don't see a problem with this. You know, I feel good about the fact that the Parks Department has talked to the school district, and the school district has talked to the police department, and the city and the school district, you know, have worked together collaboratively very well in the past and present, and so I would support this.
Okay, could we have a motion?
I move that we hold first reading of the ordinances amending City Code 5.927.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Do we do the first reading?
Yes, so ask for... Okay.
Ms. Brooks, can you do the first reading?
Yes, ma'am. And ordinance revising ordinance 5.927 relating to park hours.
Okay, thank you. Item 7D is authorization to solicit proposals for architectural and engineering services for the library renovation project. Library.
So the council voted in May of 2017 to renovate the current library. And the process of developing a request for proposal for our initial architectural services began following that direction. The request for proposal will secure architectural services which will study, evaluate, and update the preliminary work done during the library renovation study in 2013. This firm will also complete evaluation of the current library to include assessing building code requirements, necessary infrastructure upgrades, and also a very preliminary budget development. We'll also ask them to do some conceptual design work, which will be more in the line of bubble diagrams showing adjacencies of the different portions of the library, say for instance where the children's section is in relationship to the front desk and the young adults versus the adults and so on and so forth. But it will also include graphic rendering or renderings to assist with fundraising efforts. I do want to note that upon completion of the capital campaign, the firm would then be engaged, if we're still satisfied with their work, to then move into the final design, structural plans, construction documents, and so forth. That's where we're really going to be getting more into what does this building look like. And we would anticipate it'd be during that process where we're going to have more of the robust community engagement in terms of architectural issues. This first step is really starting to help us assess the situation, give us some preliminary framework in terms of how we're moving forward, give us some graphics to be able to assist with fundraising, but move on to the nuts and bolts of design as phase two once the capital campaign is complete or well, therefore well underway. So tonight it's recommended that council authorize staff to solicit proposals for the architectural engineering services for the library renovation project. I will note that we have Ann Gaday in the back of the room. Ann has been assisting with us so far in developing this request for proposal and look forward to working with her moving into the future on this project.
Great.
Well, this is exciting. I'm so yes. glad we're finally moving on this. of course, I know that there's been other work that's being done too, so I don't want to discount that. But I'm glad to be moving ahead and to see some drawings pretty soon. Can you talk, Mr. City Manager, about the RFP process just a little bit about how the selection will be made?
Sure. And I'll talk, and I'm gonna have Jimmy, if you want to chime in, and Ann, if you want to be able to talk as well. The way it's developed is our Ann as well as Jimmy worked in concert with our public works staff in developing this RFP. But once it's issued, there'll be a deadline date. I don't have those deadline dates right at the top of my fingertips, but
we're looking at if we are able to post it on the 13th. Mm-hmm. The deadline for submission will be the 4th of December. Okay. To have the firms come back to us with proposals.
And so then after everything is submitted, there'll be a committee which will be comprised of
I'm going to say committee. It's a review panel, which is comprised of city staff, Ms. Gaudet, and also representatives of the library board to be able to review this.
So the committee counselor will be myself as the library director, Ann Gaudet as our consultant, Ann Odom. Ann has been at the library for 18 years, knows a lot of the background about the building, and also recently selected or not approved, but they've agreed to be part of this is David Ozer and the president of, or chairman of my library board, Kate Deeks.
And so then we would be anticipating bringing back a negotiated contract in February. So what we'll be doing is reviewing their qualifications, essentially. We would have to then negotiate a scope of work and the price and bring that back to you in February.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So our esteemed library board and library staff, are there... Did they not feel that they need anyone with professional architectural qualifications to review this as well?
I'm going to say that it really is looking at someone who has a project management background, and that's why we have Ms. Gaudet, who has been the project manager of Patriot Hall at Clatsop Community College. There will be the style. I mean, we can talk about that, and maybe there is someone we can look at that and have some dialogue and discussion about having someone. You're looking at someone who is I get what you're saying, counselor. Is someone who has an eye for things.
So just one other question before I very happily make this motion. In previous large projects, we've had a schedule. I want to call it a Venn diagram. It is not that. We've had a schedule where we have these steps that we're looking forward to, and we all have it, and we can talk about it in the community and all of that. Is that something that we could get for this project? That would be really helpful, I think, to all of us.
I'll say that maybe it's a little different, is that... For instance, for the Senior Center project, we went through this process after we received all the funds.
Went through what process? Having a schedule?
Hiring an architect.
I see.
And
the schedule, we had this for the Heritage Square project, we had it for the Parks Master Plan. So that you see, I don't know really what is the foundation's. Do they have a deadline in mind of when they want to raise money? What are they looking at? We just heard a couple of deadlines from Mr. Pearson about when this RFP would come back, when it would go. Just it's a large project, and it's really important to the community, and a lot of great people are really invested in it. And then to invest more of the community in it, the more that we know what the steps are, it makes it, easier for the council to have some kind of oversight on the project, because it is a city project, and just also helps to make it more easily communicated to the public.
Just a suggestion. I'll say that I think that maybe at some point in time in the future, we can look at maybe what the foundation, have a discussion with the foundation in terms of the steps that are being taken for fundraising. Right. For instance, with the Heritage Square Garden of Surging Waves, we actually were working on design for several years before we actually went out to bid on the project.
Oh, sure.
And
so
there's kind of some flexibility there as well. But maybe there's a way we can have a conversation with the foundation about the fundraising side of things, in terms of they have some milestones.
So it sounds like you're asking for something, kind of a broad outline of start to finish, where we are now, some steps, and when do we anticipate these things to happen,
right?
And when's it all going to be maybe done?
Right.
Sort
it helps
of,
to de- kind of it's a tool that helps develop questions. How's it going? Where are you in this process? What is the process? That sort of thing. Anyway. I move that we authorize staff to solicit proposals for architectural engineering services on the library renovation project.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. Next item is a request to cut trees in West Niagara.
So Steve Roman and Dan Seeley have submitted an application to fell or cut trees in city right-of-way. And this right-of-way is in an unimproved section of West Niagara. And we have some aerial photographs which show the specific location. These were also in the packet. A prior homeowner planted the trees as a hedge, but they're never pruned and let go and now stand about 50 feet tall. Mr. Roman is requesting the trees be cut for views, while Mr. Seeley has requested the trees to be cut for tree hazard concerns. The city has a water line running through this area, and our Public Works Operations Division were in favor of cutting the trees due to the roots, which have a high potential to cause damage in that underground utility. The decision for cutting trees in the right-of-way is typically made by the engineering department. However, due to the sheer number and size and scale of these trees, it was determined that this would be brought to City Council for consideration and for direction. Should Council agree with the request to approve the cutting of the trees, it's highly recommended that the condition included in the memo be applied. It's recommended that Council consider the proposed tree removal within the unimproved public right-of-way.
I wondered, has the city received any letters in opposition?
No.
No?
No.
And how many trees are we talking about?
Jeff, do you want to come up?
35, 40. It's not, some are large, and a lot of them are little small ones in between the bigger ones.
Okay. Okay. Anyone else have any questions?
I was going to say, the reason we provided so many pictures is so you can get an idea from the different angles of what they look like and how many there are.
It doesn't look like a hedge. I'll agree.
No, it does not.
Okay. And engineering has no problem with this?
Well, if you look at if we back up to the second drawing, or second exhibit. Keep going. Yeah, you can see the water line in question. We kind of wish that the trees hadn't been able to grow this large or be there in the first place, but if we have to repair that water line in the middle of the night, or if a tree blow down takes that water line up with it, it's going to be quite a mess and quite a difficult repair. It's difficult enough getting equipment in an area like that, but to have to chainsaw through roots while you're trying to dig, really difficult. So that's our perspective on it. As far as the hazard issue, we did not take it to, normally in a case like this, we might consult a arborist on the true hazard danger. That's maybe we can have the property owner speak about what they've experienced in the past as far as limb blowdown and potential tree blowdown. But we know we're seeing more and more with these larger winds that we're getting, these larger storms that we're getting. We're seeing more exposure to trees, especially a row of trees like that.
Okay, thank you. We want a motion?
I'll just say it was an unfortunate selection of trees by the homeowner who planted the hedge. Usually they have labels that tell you if they grow to be 100 feet tall, pick ones that grow to be 10 feet tall.
Do we have a motion, or do we want to hear from the homeowners, or do we just want to?
I move that we approve the proposed removal of trees within the unimproved public right-of-way.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I figured that would save you from coming up. But, okay.
It's the end of our back. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, our last item is changes in meeting dates in 2018 that fall on holidays, and those include January 1st, January 15th, February 19th, and September 3rd.
And the proposal is to move the meetings to the following day of Tuesday.
I move we move the meetings to the appropriate day, the following Tuesdays.
Following
the Mondays.
Following.
It's the Tuesday.
Okay.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Thanks. Okay. Any other citizen comments about any other item that's not covered on the agenda? Thanks, Anna.
I'm Linda Dugan, 1017 Franklin. Also have an insurance agency, 1139 Exchange. So the reason I'm really here is wearing my insurance hat. This top document is something I found on my computer from 2011. As an insurance agent, I can write policies depending on the crimes in the areas. And so in 2011, I was having trouble writing insurance policies for businesses in downtown Seaside. And I get this information off of Sperling's Best Places to Live, and so it's information that you guys can pull. So the first one, at that time, they used a scale from 1 to 10. Property crime in Seaside was at a 9. So it was very difficult to insure businesses without alarm systems. So I was down there in 2011 talking to the mayor and city manager and the police chief down there. So I found this on my computer. But then if we go to the next page, this was data that I could get over the weekend. And what this is showing is, I guess I back up. So in 2011, you see Astoria, the U.S. average is 4. Astoria was 4. U.S. average is 4, and Seaside was a 9 on the property crime. So then we go to 2017, and I really hadn't looked at this for a while, but I have a lot of homeowners that are complaining their homeowners' policies are increasing. I'm not able to insure some risk that I can insure before, like somebody's building a house, we can insure the risk whether it was fenced or not. I'm having trouble doing that now, so I pulled the data, and I wanted to compare Seaside and Astoria. You can compare Astoria Metro and Astoria General, but I didn't pull, you guys can go in and pull that. But anyway, you see Seaside's actually dropped down. This is now 1 to 100 is the rate. Seaside was at a 9. It's dropped down to 78.5, so that would probably be about an 8. So it's dropped a point. But the Astoria Metro area, they were at a 4. They were at the U.S. average. And you see U.S. average is still 38.1, but that Astoria Metro is 55.8. So in 6 years, it's jumped up almost 2 points. The state, I know we talk about the state having an issue too, but it's at that 4.8 on the property. But then you look down at the violent crime, and I was really shocked at this. I don't know if something happened recently, but you can see Seaside's at 13.5, and I think a lot of us think of Seaside as being more of a violent crime community. But Astoria's at this 52.6. You know, hopefully it's just an anomaly. This information comes from the FBI. Our police, our departments report to the FBI what the crime rates are, and then the FBI publishes this for public use. So the next one is the county data. Oh, my time's up. Okay, well, anyway, you get the idea.
Ms. Dugan, what's the Astoria Metro mean?
Well, when you can pull, they have comparisons. So I think, I wonder if it's downtown, then Astoria would be out.
Does it include unincorporated Clatsop County, perhaps?
I don't know.
Like Lewis and Clark?
Maybe has an Astoria, Astoria address. You're probably right. And you can go out, and I didn't copy that for you, but you can go out and compare the Astoria, Astoria Metro.
Okay, so there is a, you can go and break it down by
Astoria. Yeah, it's out there. Astoria without the Metro.
And you brought this just to bring that to our attention, or is there something else?
Yeah, so this is over 6 years. So again, right. If you do what you've been doing last 6 years, you're going to have. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was just able to pull that data from 2011, so I gave a comparison.
Okay. So, do you have any idea what, I'm just trying to make sense of the number 52.6. So, I mean, what does that equate to in terms of an actual number of incidents and a number of violent crimes in a year? I just don't know whether I should be alarmed by that, or is that something that's very statistically tiny, but because we're such a small community, it made the number jump up.
I don't think that's it, because I think I don't know what they're using. If they're using per population or how it's working, but because I know when I approached them in Seaside in 2011. They were trying to find every way to say, no, this isn't, you know, but it came back that, yeah, we've got a problem. Yeah, so I think it's based on probably population, but your police chief would know. Yeah.
And clarification again on page, the timeline between page 2 and page 3?
Oh, that's just now. So one is county, page 2, so page 2 is...
They're both now.
Now. I got them over the weekend. You can go out to Sperling's Best Places and run them however you want, all different ways.
Okay.
Yeah, what would be fun is to do Portland and Astoria and see what's going on. You know, it'd just be interesting to see how we're really... And you can see the U.S. and the state is here, so we're definitely...
Okay. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, this meeting.
May I ask a question? On our work session Wednesday, I thought we're starting at 9, but I've seen on the agenda we're starting at 8. So is it 8 or is it 9?
So the council at their last work session asked for a half day to discuss the vision of the community. So this. Includes no presentation from staff. This is your time and your ability to dialogue. So the only thing we need to know is if you don't want to start at 8 and you'd rather start at another time, we just have to notify within 24 hours of that. So if you're wanting to start at a different time.
I'd be for starting at 9.
Doesn't matter to me.
And what time would we anticipate this meeting being over?
12.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay, then 9 o'clock?
9 o'clock.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Now the meeting is adjourned.